TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I've got to say, that is a striking forehead tattoo you got there since our last podcast.
Oh, Chris, I didn't realize that you would notice, but thank you. I appreciate that.
How could I miss it, Matthew?
Well, I guess that's true. It is a little bit in your face, as they say. I'm glad you like it. It took a lot longer to get than I thought it would. But I think it turned out actually really well. So
it looks nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a little snazzier than I thought it would be. So,
yeah, well, I think it goes well with your new hairstyle.
Yes. Well, my hair wasn't actually this long, so I had to get the extensions and, but I'm hoping to grow it out to this length. So hopefully okay. We'll get there.
All right. That sounds great. Well, I've done nothing for the last 6 hours, but eat Ferengi low carb beans and watch people play childish games.
That sounds like an actually terrible day. So I'm so sorry that's been your day.
Yeah, it's okay. I got these cool little sticks. I've been tapping them all day.
I hear that those sticks have a lot of different uses, and I'm not quite sure I want to know what those uses are.
Yeah, some things are best left on the other side of the wormhole.
Yes.
All right. Well, everyone, as you can tell, the time has come. We're going to be talking about Move Along Home, the 10th episode of Season 1 of Deep Space Nine. And here's a quick rundown of the episode. Some aliens called the Wadi come through the wormhole, and Sisko gets really excited about a first contact opportunity, while Dr. Bashir gets really stressed out that he forgot to pack his dress uniform. When the Wadi arrive, they just want to play games, which of course makes Quark really happy, but it turns out to be a little bit dangerous for some of the crew. Sisko, Dax, Bashir, Kira. Premon seems amused, but Odo's not. And at the end of the day, we learn that maybe it wasn't so dangerous. And Matthew, what else do we learn about this episode? Where should we start?
You know, actually, the place that I wanted to start here was something that kind of stood out to me as I was watching the episode, and that was about the relationship between Sisko and Jake. We've had this kind of budding relationship between Jake and Nog, mm-hmm. and, you know, Sisko not necessarily being comfortable with that, but, you know, in some ways, there aren't many people Jake's age for him to hang out with on the station. And so There's not a lot that Sisko can do about whether or not he hangs out with Jake. But because of that, and because of the age that Jake is at, you know, he's becoming interested in girls. And of course, Sisko's worried that, you know, the place that he's learning about girls from is from Nog. And of course,
well, I'd be a little bit worried as well if I were his dad. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that what I appreciate about this episode is kind of tackling that and the way that it does and starting the conversation about, you know, anyone who's been a parent or has worked with young adults of this age realizes, you know, anytime, I think Jake's supposed to be like, what, 13 here, 12, 13?
He says he's 14. Yeah.
Okay, 14. There we go. And so, this is par for the course, you know, where as you grow up, you begin to have, you know, those type of feelings and, you know, your body's changing, yada, yada, yada. Nobody needs to get a birds and the bees lesson, but that's right. happening here. And I love that in this episode, basically, Sisko wants to have that conversation with Jake and doesn't get to because of what happens with the Wadi. But
he tries really hard to work it in. He's like, well, you know, it's kind of like when you're on a first date with a girl. And Jake's kind of like, Dad, don't even try. Please I see what you're doing there.
I love that because... you know, one of the things that Avery Brooks has always talked about with this show, and of course, Cirroc Lofton, was the way in which this was a very good representation of what excellent fatherhood looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy to have those conversations with your kids, but I would probably say it's probably never easy to have those type of conversations with your kids.
Right. Yeah.
So I just appreciate this show really doing a great job of showing us what that kind of looks like to be a parent who's invested in your kid's life and is willing to have the hard conversations when they need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's a good element of this episode up there at the beginning. And it also is giving us those seeds of the Nog-Jake relationship, which turns out to be very important for both of them. Mm-hmm. And I would say, especially for Nog, in the way that he grows up on the station, thanks to the influence of Jake and Benjamin and everyone around. But yeah, that is a nice element. And then, I mean, how do you feel about the other characterizations in the episode, I suppose? Because I feel like some of them are pretty accurate, like Kira and Jadzia. I think those characters feel the way that I expect them to feel at this point in the series. And then you've got Bashir, who feels like quite a reversion of where the Bashir character is at this point after the episodes that we've had.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, it's always interesting where things happen in a season, and you know, it makes you wonder, especially with the first season and you've got so many writers working on things. Mm-hmm. You know, are you getting the opportunity to kind of see what the other writers are doing? Are you all necessarily on the same page with who the characters are at this moment, and is everybody trying to figure that out? And so, you know, this one to me feels a little bit like, you know, you've got these characters and they're in their writing rooms and they're trying to figure these things out, and it doesn't necessarily always jive. And mainly too, like I just kind of wonder when this script was written as compared to some of the other scripts that we've had so far. And, you know, was this more of a, you know, first run script in the sense like, this was one of the first ones that was done. And so therefore, you know, when that falls in the shooting order for the season and everything, does it then connect as well with some of the things that have already been established? And so, you know, those are things to me that I think are interesting. And it's 100%, I think, valid that, in all honesty, I think Bashir feels a little bit off in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Kira herself feels slightly off as well. You know, she talks about being a Bajoran administrator, but I mean, that's not really Kira's personality. She's not an administrator. You know, she was a warrior. Yeah. And so that also felt like not completely in line with what we've been getting with that character.
I feel like her attitude, though, towards what was going on was appropriate for Kira at this point.
Could not agree with you more. I mean, and in all honesty, what I actually love about the episode as well is that Kira's attitude and Sisko's attitude are very similar, which is they're quite annoyed with what's going on.
I think
that's something that's very funny because it gives them common ground as we look towards, you know, the rest of the series, where they begin to find that they're not as dissimilar as you might have thought at the beginning of the series.
Yeah, it does feel like this script was, again, I also don't know exactly when it was written, given that it's the 10th episode, it is among that first group of scripts that they were putting together, and maybe it was one of the earlier ideas anyway. The story itself is by Michael Piller.
Right.
And he had some interesting things to say about it. And Frederick Rapoport was the writer, together with Lisa Rich and Jean Carrigan Fauci. And these are not names that we're so familiar with, right, with Deep Space Nine. In fact, Rapoport wrote only two episodes, this one and Sanctuary. Now, Lisa Rich, she wrote Duet as well. So Move Along Home and Duet. And then Carrigan Fauci did Duet along with her. So I think we can all agree that that's a very good story.
Yes.
But among the three of the people here writing the teleplay for this episode, they have a grand total of three episodes among them.
Yeah.
And that's so really they're not the, you know, core of the writing room of DS9 or anything. And this is early on. So Ira's just getting going. Rapoport is a friend of Ira Stephen Bear's. And Ronald D. Moore is not there yet. And in fact, Ronald D. Moore was considering joining and saw this episode and thought that maybe everyone had lost their minds. And luckily,
that's understandable.
Yeah. And then luckily he came on board. But you definitely hear, you can feel that the writers don't quite yet have a good grip on what DS9 is going to become.
Right.
And so you get a mix of stories and you get some fun ones. Some we've talked about, some will be coming up. And I think this one falls in that category, but they didn't quite land the starship, as we have been saying recently about some other things. And you feel that a little bit. I will say, though, it is interesting that two of the writers of this episode are responsible for Duet, which I think we agree is the moment where DS9 kind of finds itself.
Yeah.
And then from that point forward evolves into the show that we have come to love so much.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, one of the things that we've talked a lot about, I think, so far with this season is the places where we do feel like there has been a true understanding of the characters, especially as we've as we would come to know them, and you know where the series seems to be really finding itself, and this I think is one of the places where the first season, I think, you know, when people think of the first season and the idea of like it kind of having a little bit of a bad rap, I think this is one of the prime examples of that. And it's not because the episode itself is terrible. I think it's just really, to me, it comes down, I think, to the execution of the episode. And I think there were definitely opportunities for this episode to have been better if it had been given kind of maybe a rewrite. Where you know, I think the idea of meeting an alien species from the Gamma Quadrant that is kind of in love with games is actually a really good idea. And, you know, I think too of the idea that this is something to which when I'm thinking of the time period this is coming out, you know, the idea of like video game life and people becoming more and more engrossed in like video games and those kind of things. You know, again, there's a whole way in which I think this could have been better, you know, and part of that, it just comes down to the idea of really editing the story, I think, more finding some kernels in here and then kind of moving forward with that. So this is a place where it's like, I can see the potential for this episode to have been better than it is. And was. We just don't quite get there, right? And that's also, I think, to be expected in when you're writing, we've talked about before, when you're writing so many episodes of television for a season, and you know, I've even heard the writers talk about this from Deep Space Nine and TNG. It's so much work to try and and do this many episodes of television so quickly. Yeah. And yeah, so right. I think this is definitely just one of those where it's like, yeah, we just kind of missed the boat on this one. Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget that so many people who were working on the show were coming right off the Next Generation.
Yeah.
So for them, this might be early in season one of a new series, but for them, it's a continuation of what they had been working on. Not everybody, mm-hmm. of course, but a lot of the people involved. So the hamster wheel of creativity spinning and spinning and spinning away for sure, right?
Yep, 100%.
There's been so much background about this episode through the years, and you're talking about rewriting, and it apparently went through quite a lot of rewriting and maybe in the wrong direction because it was originally a more complex story. It originally had higher stakes than finding out that it was just a game of chutes and ladders, which is where the name Chula comes from, and that no one was ever in any real danger. I kind of like the statement at the end of Fallow when he says, it's just a game. Like, mm-hmm. come on, guys, do you think we'd actually kill people in a game? I think that it kind of works. It's kind of fun in a situation where we often deal with life-threatening spatial anomalies and aliens and battles and such. But I can also understand how a lot of viewers feel cheated at the end. Like, right. Because, well, there was nothing to it, actually.
Mm-hmm. And you know, what's interesting is that one of the things that I'm kind of thinking of in a way that I think this could have been a much more interesting episode is, it would have been fascinating if they had basically gone the route of the Hunger Games, right? Like mm-hmm. That type of idea where, yeah, what if this civilization was one that for entertainment value, their games were what we might think of as gladiatorial and or, you know, though I think that's something where this really just could have been something if we had stretched the idea even more and really kind of went to a darker place in some ways. And in mm-hmm. many ways, I think that the type of place that, you know, I think future Deep Space Nine stories would take it, right? But they're not there yet. This is, like you said, you know, you're coming off TNG, everything is still so early. We're just not in that place where I think the writers are challenging the preconceptions of Star Trek as we've known it, mm-hmm. Especially with TNG. And we're, you know, we've talked a little bit about the way in which the show has set itself apart from its predecessor. But this is definitely a place where I think that type of thought process would have just been a bridge too far for them at this point.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like it shows a bit, and I think we talked about this a while back on The Orb, Michael Piller's vision for the show versus what the show became once mm-hmm. Ira and others were really running it, because he actually seemed to be fairly happy with the way this episode turned out. He has noted that he did a rewrite on the script, and he had a lot of fun working on it. And I do think he had a vision for the episode that was bigger than what we saw on the screen. He said in The Companion that it was based on an episode of The Prisoner called Checkmate, and that the characters were trapped in a surreal village in an earlier version of the script, which I imagine turned out to be too expensive for them to shoot. And that seems to be a theme throughout this, actually, that they had to pare down concepts that they had for each of the levels of the game. And so what we ended up getting is more simplistic than what they were going to put the characters through initially. But it does feel a little bit to me. I mean, everything that Michael Piller did for Star Trek, obviously, was super important for the development of the franchise and for this series in particular. But he's also said that this was in the Deep Space Nine magazine back early on, actually the third issue of it, he said that Move Along Home is one of the best premises of the season. It's a little hokey, but there are many humorous and interesting twists in it. So he's still, at that point, I think, really liking how the episode was coming together, or he was just trying to play it up for the audience. I think you probably remember these magazines. That was the DS9 one, but then there was Communicator as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. And like in Communicator, Rick Berman always had the little sit down with the editors, and he would kind of tell you what was coming up in the season and kind of playing up storylines that we would be seeing a little bit later on. So this was part of that kind of thing. But thinking about the story and rewriting it and trying to get to a better place, it feels like doing that. Let me put it this way. I think that with the writing room that we get later on and the way that they became adept at using the station and using the characters and using the premise of Deep Space Nine to tell really strong stories and what we would consider bottle shows, Duet being a prime example of that, actually not too long after this, I think they could have reworked the story in a way that would have made it a much stronger story without needing a big budget to do it.
Sure.
But at this point, all the comments that I've read over the years come back to the fact that they had blown the budget. Emissary was super expensive. Here they are about midway through their first season, because it's a shorter season than normal for Star Trek of that time period. And they were over budget, and so they couldn't do the things they wanted to do. And despite that, this is actually, this episode has the biggest budget of any episode since Emissary, which I suppose you can believe if you look at the costume designs and the sets that they use and the hairstyles. This episode was actually nominated for an Emmy Award for hairstyle, for hair, which I don't know. There are much more impressive hairstyle accomplishments to come on DS9.
This is true.
Beyond this, but I'm not sure that the budget problem was really the solution to making this a better story. I think if they had done the same story a few seasons down the road, maybe they could have taken what is a good premise and turned it into something that fans would have really enjoyed a lot more.
I'm thinking about just the story itself, and you know, them talking about this idea that, you know, the like budget, is that really the issue? And I don't think, you know, it's interesting. I don't really think it is necessarily the budget that's the issue here. I think, you know, kind of what is the issue at stake is the problem that I see with the episode in general, is that I don't think that it has the guts really to be as dark as it needs to be. Because I think, you know, what would have helped the episode, in all honesty, was to be more terrifying.
Right. Yeah.
And really kind of play up, because, you know, when you think about what's happening in the way in which, you know, our characters here are stuck in a game with a bunch of aliens that we have no idea about. Right. And so their preconceptions and understandings of the world are very different than ours. We already can see that. And so I think, again, making this episode darker and a little bit more terrifying, maybe more of a slightly horror vibe, would have actually really helped the episode.
Yeah.
I think that comes from the thought process of something a little bit more akin to the Hunger Games type of thing. But still, you know, I think this just, it could have been just really interesting. You know,
but I think at that point in time, in Star Trek in particular, that's not a type of story exactly. that they were going to tell.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's a great point. No, I think that's an excellent point, Chris.
In Star Trek these days, they might tell that story.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of done that, right? I feel like when I was, what's that episode of, and I can't remember the title of it because, you know, I've only gotten a chance to really watch through season one of Strange New Worlds once when we were doing Saddle Up. But, you know, I think of the Gorn episode that they have there.
I think it's Memento Mori, probably.
Okay. Yeah. I think of that where, you know, you get that Gorn loose on the Enterprise and that episode's just terrifying, right? It's an aliens inspired story. But I also think, you know, that's also a type of story that they would have told in later Deep Space Nine, right? I think if you do this type of story in later Deep Space Nine, it's a scarier, creepier type of story.
Well, something like Impak Nur, you know, it has that dark, frightening feeling to it.
Yes,
tone of it is different than what they would have done at this point in time.
Yeah, 100%.
Because
100%.
Up to this point in time, the scariest things you get on Star Trek are like schisms on the Next Generation, something like that, right?
This is true.
Yeah. In light of this season of Star Trek Picard, no spoilers, but I just want to mention, when I was rewatching Move Along Home here, to refresh before we had this discussion, I was thinking that if instead of Joel Brooks, Fowlow were played by Todd Stashwick, it would completely make the episode better.
I mean, couldn't he make anything better? I could totally see that. That'd be great.
Another thing that stood out to me in this episode is that obviously, these Starfleet officers, maybe with the exception of Jadzia, haven't played much Legend of Zelda. Because if they had, all these puzzles on these ships would have been really easy to solve, especially the Alamarain hopscotch one.
This is true. This is true. I mean, this just goes to show you that video games can actually be something that would be a benefit. So, you know, make sure that, you know, you're not discounting the ways in which video games can actually have a positive impact on your ability to get through alien games that trap you in them. So I'm just saying you should probably be playing more video games.
Yeah. Well, that's the ultimate message of the episode,
that's
right?
What they're going for. I'm thinking that's exactly what Michael Piller was hoping that... Yeah.
Culture rules, right?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what he's thinking to himself. I really just hope that we get more kids playing more video games. That's really going to be the answer.
That's right. Now, if only the Oculus Quest 2 had been available back then and you could get into an actual virtual reality game like this.
Yeah. That's a good point, though, too, Chris. Because this game... in some ways, you know, it's a weird perversion of the holodeck, right?
Yeah.
But what's weird about this game is that instead of willingly stepping into the holodeck, here it inadvertently puts you into a holodeck like situation without your knowledge. And so that's just this is one of those places where I feel like we have some interesting things that just don't really get discussed in the episode, which are, you know, this society, because it's built around loving games, nobody minds being thrown into these games without their consent, it seems like. Whereas, you know, for us and, you know, everybody in the Alpha Quadrants, pretty much it seems like understanding is that to be playing a game, you're somebody you willingly put yourself into that position.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, you could have done a whole thing here, which, you know, they kind of allude to at the very end, which is, you know, you're not quite ready for our civilization, so maybe we'll come back. You know, that's a message, too, I feel like could have been hit even more in the episode, and I think in maybe some different ways, and it actually would have been really helpful if they had.
Yeah, maybe we'll come back. It's okay. Please don't.
Yeah, no worries. You know what? We're good.
We're good. We enjoyed that game, and we're gonna move on to something
thanks,
else.
But no, you know? Thanks.
This is like our one time playing ET, and now we're gonna sell the cartridge. And then it turns out the only time we encounter the Wadi again is at a job fair on Lower Decks. And we actually get to see Fowler again. He's running a booth there. That was kind of fun. But no, I was just thinking about the virtual reality component to it and how it could play differently today because it would be something that we could associate with a little bit more instead of feeling like such a futuristic thing. Because I have an Oculus Quest 2, and I, for example, a game I played years ago, many people have played, Myst, very immersive environment. They actually redid Myst for VR, which is an experience that at the time this episode of DS9 aired, when I was playing Myst and similar games, I couldn't imagine actually being able to step into that world, whereas now it is possible. So it shows you where gaming has gone.
Yeah.
And one thing we haven't talked about here, and we will not really talk about it here, because if you want to hear the discussion, you can roll back to about 9 years ago, more than 9 years ago, Matthew, almost 10 years ago, when you and I and Drew, who used to be a host of Standard Orbit here on the network, got together and we talked about this episode in the context of it being a TOS episode and how it works so much better if you watch it as a TOS episode. So if anyone wants to hear more about Move Along Home, look way back in the catalog to the Orb 48. The title is She's Really Good with the D20s.
Yeah.
And you can hear, you know, a whole discussion, which is mostly different than what we talked about today. I actually did go back and listen to it again just to remember what we said, because I don't remember what we said on podcasts 10 years ago. One thing I did discover is that I said that the problem is that this group of writers, they misread the show Bible, and they thought that the Wadi were coming from the gamer quadrant, not the gamma quadrant. And that's where the whole problem started.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They didn't realize that the wormhole had actually spit them out into the gamer quadrant, you know, which is always awkward when it just randomly spits you out into a place you weren't expecting. So
yeah.
Well,
but
done,
that happens
wormhole.
In games sometimes. So
yeah, they went down, it's like in Super Mario Brothers, they went down the wrong warp pipe, you know? So
exactly. Exactly. All right. Any final thoughts on this? What's your rating for Move Along Home?
Yeah, I mean, this is I would say one of the most maligned episodes of the series. I don't think it's the worst, because that would be Prophet and Lace to me. But this is not a great episode, but there are some things that I enjoyed about it as I was doing my rewatch, and specifically the relationship between Jake and Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, actually. And so there is some redeeming value to it. So I'm going to give this 2.5 out of 5 Wadi dice, because I see there being seeds of a good story here. Mm-hmm. They just don't germinate into a full-fledged story. So, yeah, I mean, 2.5 out of 5, it's definitely average.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I think there is a foundation for a good story here, but it was written kind of at the wrong time for Star Trek, I guess.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if it had happened later, it would have been better. And I think that besides the Jake and Sisko thing that we talked about here, that element is really good. There's good stuff here for Quark. You know, they put Quark in a situation where his creed almost causes a real problem. And if they had gone down that path, and in one version of the script, they actually did have it where Bashir didn't make it back, and Quark had to hand over all of his winnings to get Bashir back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so there was a lesson there for him. If that had been in the story, I think it might have helped a little bit, at least with character development for Quark. But Anyway, I'm going to give this episode one giant chasm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Goodness.
Shop six. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Move Along Home. I'm sure you've got some. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the discussions beyond the podcast. So it's a closed group. And if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Once you're in there, you'll see a post in the timeline for this episode of The Orb, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there and get some chat going about SHAPS and moving along home. To find the Babel Conference, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. It should come right on up. If it doesn't, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose the orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And of course, you can always find us in social media. Our username everywhere is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. And if you'd like to help us keep the orb and everything we're doing on the network going, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how to get involved, how to support the network. We wouldn't be here without the help of everyone who is supporting us now. So thank you so very much for all of your help. Now, Matthew, when you're not entering Chula at the first SHAP, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, I mean, it's difficult to be stuck there. So it's very frustrating. So forgive me.
A lot of children there, Matthew.
I they say that, but, you know, I'm finding it difficult to get out of here. Maybe I just haven't learned the rules as fast as Quark does, but, you can find me all over the place under social media under the name MattRushing02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero are the places I am most active. Of course, outside of the orb, you can find me doing a bunch of shows. One is called the 602 Club. We talk about all of the fandoms we love, not just Star Trek over there. So hope you'll check that out. Of course, Literary Treks, books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, we're also doing the 20th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise over on Warp 5. Saddle Up is about to return as Star Trek Strange New Worlds is coming back for Season 2. And as this has been recorded, the final episode of Star Trek Picard is out, and that means that the Unofficial Tango is going to be talking about that, so you want to check that out as well. Over on the Nerd Party Network, I've got two shows. One's called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out where your D20s landed on the floor, where can people find you?
Yeah, it is hard to find those there in Quarks. All the commotion and all the stick tapping, which is very distracting.
Very frustrating. But very annoying.
When I'm not searching for those, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, doing those shows with you. You can also find me in many episodes in the back catalog. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time as well. And then in social media, if you'd like to chat, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That is my username everywhere. Twitter's where I'm most active. You can also find me on Mastodon, SC Brian Jones, on the Trekkie.social instance. And I'd love to chat with you about Star Trek or whatever. So drop me a line there in social media. Well, Matthew, I am looking forward to next time. We're going to have kind of an old guy with some really big ears and a delightful voice as we explore the Negus.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that to happen. I always love when the Negus visits. But we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.